You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Live on Aero. Presented by Ger Sweeney.
Good evening and welcome. Nice to have your company for another edition of the Irish programme called Live on Air. I do hope you had a good week. Coming up this evening on the programme, Ben Sweeney will be joining us again from County Clare in Ireland to tell me all about what's been happening in the general election campaign in Ireland. A lady by the name of Leonor Bethencourt is a very talented woman. She was born in Spain. She has been living in Dublin with her Canadian husband since 1997, and she herself is in the arts. I'll be talking to her about her life and times a little later on in the programme. I was talking to Bill Padley on Let's Talk last Thursday about my book, which is called Launching Clare FM, and at the time he said to me, what did you say when you actually opened the radio station? And I tried to remember, so I said, actually I'll play it, I have it, I'll play it on Monday on the programme. Plus I told him about the first song that was played and I said I'll play that as well, so I will honour that promise. Last week I didn't get a chance to pay tribute to Patrick Collins, a well-known jazz fiddle player who was synonymous with a group called Hotfoot, but I will be playing something from Hotfoot in memory of Patrick Collins this week. I will also be looking at some of the famous Irish birthdays, and if there is time, I'll be looking and listening to the number one song from this particular day in Ireland back in 1966. There's a lot in there. As always, if you would like to touch base with the programme, you can do so by emailing Ger, G-E-R, at tre.radio. Marcus Connaughton is a man from Ireland, in fact a broadcaster, worked with RTE, the national broadcaster, for a time. And he was listening last week, he's living here in Spain, and he had fond memories of Patrick Collins and Hotfoot as well. And Marcus is a man that I will definitely be putting a microphone under his nose very shortly. Marcus, if you're listening this evening, thank you for your email and for listening in. And look forward to meeting you in the very near future. Now, we have to mention two people that passed away in the past week as well. I was very saddened, but not hugely surprised when I heard the news that Seamus Mallon, the SDLP politician from Northern Ireland and civil rights campaigner, passed away. Last year, I brought his book to Spain to read, but at the same time, I started writing my own book and I got 3 chapters of his book read in the entire time. So I have to go back to it now. It'll probably be more poignant, but it's a lovely book. It's a great book and well put together. And Seamus Mallon, ar yeshte gariba anam. Also, the passing of the grandson of James Joyce, Stephen Joyce, died in Paris. So I thought it would be worthy of a mention. And I know that we were talking to Roger Comiskey, who would be our Joycean expert, about the time when they were talking last year about bringing Joyce's body back to Dublin. And Stephen Joyce would have had the final say, and I know that he wasn't terribly keen on the idea, but the idea has been dropped. Anyway, again, just to remember James Joyce's grandson, Stephen, who passed away, and again, also Arieste Goreva Anna. Right, will we take a look at the birthdays? I think we should. It'd be about time, all right, Jerry, wouldn't it? And we have a fair few this week. Today, the 27th of January, Brian Downey, the drummer with Thin Lizzy, was born in Dublin in 1951. Joe Duffy, the broadcaster, born in Dublin in 1956. Wonderful Ireland and Munster rugby player Keith Wood was born in Killaloe on this day in 1972. And Mary Jane O'Donovan Rossa, Irish nationalist and poet, was born in Cork on this day in 1845. Tomorrow, Tuesday, the 28th of January. Hard to believe January is nearly done, isn't it? Ryan Sheridan, singer-songwriter, born in 1982. Paddy Tunney, traditional singer and folklorist, was born in 1921 on that day. And Hugo Hamilton, the writer, was born in Dublin in 1953. 29th, it is Wednesday of this coming week. Pat Kenny, the broadcaster, he was born in Dublin on that day in 1948. Wallace Bird, the musician and singer, was born in Wexford in 1982. Liam Riley, the singer with Bagatelle, is born in Dundalk in 1955. And Sophie McMahon, cricket player. A cricketer, yeah. She was born in Dublin in 1997. Thursday is the 30th. Anne Doyle, former newsreader with RTE, was born in Ferns in County Wexford on that day in 1952. Paddy Keenan, musician, great Inland Pipes player, and featured with the Bothy Band. He was born in Trim in 1950. And Kitty O'Shea, the lady who was linked to Parnell, Charles Stuart Parnell, later went on to become his wife. Well, she was born on that day, the 30th of January, back in 1845. I don't have anything for Friday, which is the 31st of January. Saturday, the 1st of February, Thomas McDonagh, nationalist, poet, playwright, and 1916 rebel, born in Clochjordan in County Tipperary in 1878. And Joan Burton, the politician, born in Dublin in 1940. And finally, next Sunday is the 2nd of February. James Joyce was born in Rathgar on that day in 1882. Tony Ryan, entrepreneur, business person, born in Thurles in County Tipperary in 1936. Desmond O'Malley, or Desi O'Malley as he was known, or is known, politician and co-founder of the political party Progressive Democrats. He was born in Limerick in 1939. Hilton Edwards, director and producer, born in 1903. And Dorothy McCardle, writer, novelist, playwright and non-academic historian, born in Dundalk on that day in 1889. Normally at this time I would be playing something from one of the people there who would be into music, and but today I'm going to do something different, and I am going to fulfil my promise to pay tribute to Patrick Collins from Hotfoot. A well-known musician passed away a couple of weeks ago, and thanks to my good old pal PJ Curtis for letting me know about that, because I hadn't heard. A jazz fiddle player is how he was described, and Hotfoot was the band that he was mainly associated with. They were a gypsy quartet, I think is how PJ described it to me. And the original members of the band included James Faulkner, Declan McNeillis, James Gibson, and finally Patrick Collins. Right, let's take a listen to Hotfoot, but can I just apologise for the quality? This goes back to about the mid-1970s or late 1970s. There is a little deviation in the quality, so my apologies for that. But let's take a listen to them. Hotfoot.
Someday you'll leave me, saying, can we still be friends?
As I said, the quality wasn't A1, but I hope that you enjoyed Hotfoot and a song that's called I Am Confessing. Nice sound, isn't it? I found some more there from Hotfoot as well. I must give them a spin over the next wee while. That's about it for this part of the programme. Let's take a quick break. Come back to me just after that, and I'll be talking to Ben Sweeney about general election 2020.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
General election 2020 is what we're going to focus on next on the programme. The election campaign is underway. Ben joins me on the phone again. Ben Sweeney is the producer of Clare FM's morning current affairs programme, which is called Morning Focus. Ben, good to talk to you, as always.
How are you, Ger? Are you well?
I'm very well, thank you. We're having, we've had a lot of Irish weather over the last week since we spoke last here in Spain, but thankfully normality seems to have been resumed, so we're good again. General election 2020, again, let's not focus on the nitty-gritty of it, but can we firstly talk about nominations? Have they closed?
Nominations have closed. There was a much shorter run than usual because it was essentially a snap election. People really only had about 10 days to put their name in for that. Actually, it was less. It was 8 days to put their name in. Nominations closed 12 o'clock on Wednesday, and then the deadline for anyone who got cold feet was 12 o'clock on Thursday. So we have 529 candidates now fighting for those 158 seats across 31 constituencies.
Wow, that's quite a lot. I know you're based in Clare. Did you get to 14?
We got to 15, actually.
Oh, 15.
Yeah, we had 14 declared, including a couple who were hard to get in touch with, but we had a surprise one then on the ballot on Wednesday. We spoke to him earlier on. He said he only kind of made the final call on Wednesday, so he headed down. And actually, when I went up to collect the figures myself inside in the courthouse, I walked into the returning officer's office a few minutes early, and he asked if I was looking to put my name forward. He didn't realise who I was.
Right.
So I had a tough decision, but I left with the name of candidates instead of my own ballot paper.
Oh, well, that's fair enough. So 15, and Clare is a four-seater, so a lot of disappointed people in the next coming weeks or thereabouts. Okay.
Certainly will.
So
be,
we have how many? 500 and?
529 candidates.
Okay. All right. And shall we wish that... You know, it takes a lot of courage to put your name forward, doesn't it?
It does. The way the system works in Ireland is actually kind of helpful, because if it's a candidate that you wish them well, but you know they're not going to be elected, you can even give them your number one, knowing they'll be eliminated, but you'd have given them some sort of boost, and then their number two will come in. But it is, it's a tough process to put yourself forward.
So, I noticed at the end of the week that, in fact, one of the candidates in County Clare, Cathal Crowe, was on Facebook, and he said, lads, please, please, please stop saying that I'm a shoo-in, because he said it's an age-old political trick that people say, sure, look, Cathal is safe, will you give someone else your number one? And that then it happened to James Breen, who was again an independent candidate a number of years back. Everybody thought James Breen was safe, so they gave a different number one, and it ended up that James lost his seat. However, it can work the other way as well, because I know people that who are disillusioned with the whole political system have often said, I'm voting for the person least likely to get elected, that only their mother would vote for them. So it could turn out that person, if there was enough apathy, that person could get elected.
And that could very well explain a couple of the politicians we have in the Dáil at the moment,
but
we won't go into that particular debate at the moment.
A number of years ago, without going into the nitty-gritty of it, the government made some changes in relation to pensions, when people should and could retire, when the old age pension would be paid. And there wasn't a huge furore about it, but there seems to be in the last week a lot of attention being focused on that.
Yeah, it's something that really has come out of nowhere, really. It wasn't something we'd anticipated being a key election issue, but I suppose the best laid plans and all that. There's a plan to raise the state pension here to 67. Of course, the traditional one was 66 and 65 before that. But with an ageing population, they're saying that, you know, you need to make the pension older and people need to work older. However, the problem is, if you're working in public sector, you're still going to have to, if depending on your contract, retire at 65 from that particular job, but you won't be eligible for your pension for another 2 years, which would see 65-year-olds going to job interviews alongside college graduates looking for work. So it could see a lot of people between 65 and 67 going down to the local social welfare office and claiming the dole because they've been forced into retirement by their contract, but they aren't yet eligible for the pension. So that has become a big issue. It's something that the government is planning on doing. SIPTU, one of the main trade unions here, has launched the Stop 67 campaign against it. I don't know what's going to happen. There's a lot of talk from the other parties that aren't in government now saying, well, we wouldn't do that. That's, you can't be at that. But it's tough to know where it'll go in 2 weeks. I think it will be a big issue for a lot of voters, especially the older voters, or people who are looking now maybe 20 years down the line where it'll affect them. But will it change the age going up to 67? I don't know. I mean, people, realistically, the government has to tackle the problem of an ageing population.
All right. Very early on in the campaign it is, but there has already been one leaders' debate, but only between the leaders of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. I'll come back to that in a moment. The crisis in Drogheda at the moment, if people understand what it is, there's a drugs war going on in Drogheda, similar to what went on in Limerick many years ago, but that thankfully has been tidied up. It happens and has happened in various parts of Dublin down through the years as well. And somebody came up with an idea recently that we really should be kind of linking people's recreational drug use at weekends. And they're talking about professional people like lawyers and solicitors and engineers and radio presenters, maybe, and politicians who use drugs recreationally and say, actually, that's no harm. I only have a bit of this during the weekend. Or so. Somebody came up with the idea that politicians, when they're being interviewed, should be asked, have you ever used drugs yourself? And it's been proven to be quite an amazing tactic. And Taoiseach Leo Varadkar had to admit, as he did about 10 years ago in a Hot Press magazine interview, that he used cannabis in college. A number of others have been questioned and have admitted the same. Others have said, no, they didn't. Has this been making a bigger, has it had an impact on Leo Varadkar's popularity? Has it made him seem like more of a kind of a down-to-earth person? Is it a no, no, no? How has it played out?
It's a very strange sort of dynamic, actually, Ger, because the interviewer, Pat Kenny, would have known the answer to Leo's question when he asked that. The main talking point from that at the moment is that Leo hesitated before he answered the question. So he answered the question first, but in saying that I've already answered that question before and I answered it honestly. He then hesitated for about, I think it was 12 seconds before saying, yes, I did, but it was a long time ago. Now, I think there's been too much attention paid to that. I actually think he was, the way the acoustics work and people over talking or speaking over each other, he actually missed the prompt for a second response. But that gap in his response has become one of the big talking points about Leo. Now, it's interesting you should say about, does it make him more down to earth? Because he's had this problem with his image that he lacks
aloof,
empathy, let's say, to put it politely. Yeah. That he can be a very good politician when it comes to dealing with other heads of state. He can be very good. But relation to the man on the ground and going out and canvassing for votes across the country, he's not good at doing that. So it actually has helped level him up a small bit and kind of, okay, fair enough, you know, he is human. And that is something that came across in that debate that you were talking about a bit more generally, that he was a bit more emphatic, that he was able to relate to people a bit more, but it's tough to know that. Now, also, Leo does sell Fine Gael, his party, which is a party in government at the moment, as the party of law and order. So there is a slight contradiction, but he did say it was a short time ago. And as you see now, a lot of politicians, I haven't actually seen a Fianna Fáil sitting TD come out and say that they've used drugs before, but I've seen a number of politicians from other parties saying, well, yes, I've done cannabis and the likes. The drug taking itself isn't the issue. It's that hesitation during the debate is the main talking point, but I think that's really just opposition parties over-egging it for the sake of scoring points.
All right. Speaking about that debate on Virgin Television with Pat Kenny as the chairman of it, it was just between Leo and Micheál Martin, the Fianna Fáil leader. It was a leaders' debate. Who won that, Ben?
It's tough to say, to be honest. There wasn't a real winner. They weren't really looking forward in any main... there wasn't many policies outlined or whatever. Most of it seemed to relate to the history of both parties. Fianna Fáil, who were the second government in power, or second biggest party, saying that, well, Fine Gael have been in power for the last 9 years. Look at the records they have now in homelessness, hospital overcrowding and the likes. Whereas Fine Gael have been saying, well, we've been in power for 9 years. We're nearly there. We're nearly having the nut cracked. It's going to be good in a minute. And look at Fianna Fáil, you know, all the times they've been in power, as soon as they get into power, it goes to boom and then bust and you're all unemployed again. So a lot of it was reflective more than looking forward. But a lot of the commentary online was saying, well, never mind Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar, the two who took part, the big winner from the debate was Sinn Féin and their leader Mary Lou MacDonald, who was excluded from that debate. And she was excluded from that debate for a number of reasons. First of all, both of those parties would say that they're not going to go into power with Sinn Féin in some sort of power sharing agreement. And they also don't have the numbers to be the strongest party in government after this election. So there was no way that she was going to be Taoiseach. So the whole point of this debate was to have both men who could be Taoiseach fighting it out. So you'll know, this is the policies of whoever would be leading us. However, The decision to take Sinn Féin out has been very much criticised. State Broadcaster, RT and Virgin Media, who aired that other debate, accused of media bias, of putting Sinn Féin in a corner and not allowing them to be, you know, represented. Also, that hasn't helped by the fact that a poll came out this week. It put Fine Gael and Sinn Féin separated by only 2 points.
Okay.
So that hasn't helped the situation at all. But as for the debate itself, there was no clear winner. But, you know, a lot of people saying that Sinn Féin, through their absence and through the criticisms they could throw, have gained a lot of points.
I'm not asking for your personal opinion on this, but in talking within the newsroom, maybe at Clare FM and to other media colleagues, is there a sense that RTE, particularly being the public broadcaster and being funded by licence fees, is there a sense that they were being unfair by only having two leaders of the two parties and not including Sinn Féin and Labour and others?
It's a very difficult one. From someone who works in production for Current Affairs as well, I can understand the decision, because the point of it is these are the only two men who could possibly be Taoiseach, so let's hear them out. And they're also having a separate debate with all the leaders. So from one way, you can see their logic in kind of just giving the public a chance to see it, but you're also putting those two parties forward as in a way, and this isn't the intention, but you're accidentally saying, well, never mind the rest of them, these are the two parties you need to focus on. And that is a problem. It's a difficult one, and you're really going to be caught in a bind. I suspect they probably shouldn't have done it in the first place. I see the logic of it, but it just creates more awkwardness, and it leaves RT having to answer a lot of questions, whereas, you know, a full-on party leaders debate would almost have sufficed. The contrary side to that is you have a lot of smaller parties who don't deserve much airtime by comparison to the man who will be Taoiseach. But they would have had to in an equal debate situation. It's a very tricky one. The public, it really, your reaction to it in Ireland very much would depend on your own political affiliation. If you're a Sinn Féin voter, you're going to make a big thing of it. If you're a Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, you won't. And I think a lot of floating voters don't care.
Issues that we've just discussed, like the drugs use, the debates, the pensions, the nominations closing, all of those, has that taken away in any shape or form from the important issues, the two biggest ones being health and housing, and indeed climate change?
Do you know what, Jared? Actually, has the debate mentioned healthcare in quite a bit of detail, because both Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar are former ministers of health. But the key issues like healthcare and housing and climate change are being sidelined because of those headlines like, well, Leo took a long time to respond to his drugs question, or Sinn Féin are being sidelined. So there is a lot of distracting going on. And I'm sure that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil have no issue with that, because Fine Gael won't be in any rush to show off the records, the lists on housing waiting lists or hospital waiting lists. Fianna Fáil have launched their policy or their manifesto, and, you know, they haven't already been able to present a viable plan for what they're going to do to tackle both of those. So I don't think they'll take any, you know, issue with those issues being sidelined. But it is something that politicians will be getting on the doors. Nationally, it's not being an issue. In the papers, it's not being addressed properly. Climate change, as you mentioned it has sidelined it a small bit. You know, the Green Party is on a rise on the climate change issue, but other parties are trying to green themselves up since the local election.
Yeah.
But I haven't heard too many discussions about climate change in the last week anyways. Now, as they say, a week is a long time in politics. When we're talking next week, something could have happened and it will be the biggest story in the country. But as for now, it seems to be a lot of distracted side bits are getting the headlines.
All right. Ben, as always, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us and give us an update on what's been happening with GE2020, as they're calling it back home and on Twitter. So we look forward to having an update next week on the programme.
Great. Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much indeed. Ben Sweeney is the producer of Clare FM's flagship Current Affairs morning programme, which is called Morning Focus. Right, I suppose it's appropriate that I play this next, and because Ben is working, as I said, with Clare FM, and the conversation that I had the other day with Bill Padley, and Bill said, what did you say when you opened the radio station on the day? And I tried to remember, and I gave it as good a guess as I possibly could, and I actually managed to do it. This is actually what I said. And again, just like with Hotfoot, the quality isn't the best. It was a tape that was found many years after it was recorded, and the weather and the dampness and various things had got to it. But I think you'll be able to make it out.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Clare FM 96.4 FM in stereo. This is day one, minute one and second one of your brand new radio station, Clare FM. This is Spanson Hill. Spanson Hill with a difference. Good afternoon. Jerry Sweeney with you on the radio show until 5 o'clock at Clare FM, the one one you've waited for.
Let yourself out there now. Four beats.
There we go. And I will play that song in just a moment, but I'll tell you about it. Anyway, that is how the radio station was started 30 years ago. And that is a promise fulfilled to Bill. I mentioned when I was talking to Bill about the choice of song, it is a traditional Clare song. And John Kenny is a well-known and much-loved comedian and actor. And he did a reggae version of it. And we chose that particular song because it was traditional, number one, and in keeping with the music of County Clare. But number two, there was an element of fun. And we wanted people to know that we were going to have fun doing this whole radio business. And we did for a very long time. And it was also a kind of a nod to the younger generation. So let's take a listen and see if I can't crash. I won't crash the intro like I did 30 years ago. John Kenny and his reggae version of Spancel Hill.
Oh, no, let's plant yourself out there now. Full beat, right to the block, and away we go. Yoo-hoo!
Version of Spancel Hill, and you know the story behind it. Right, let's do a quick break. Come back to me just after that. I'll be meeting a fabulous lady by the name of Leonore Bethencourt.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Our Spanish-Irish cultural advisor, Jose Antonio Sierra, mentioned a lady's name to me a number of weeks ago, a lady by the name of Leonore Bethencourt. And he said, you should have a chat with that lady. And I said, why should I talk to that lady? And he said, well, very simply, she's a very talented person, number one. There's an Irish and Spanish connection. And she did a wonderful play about the Rose of Tralee. So he said, will you have a chat with her? I said, of course I'll have a chat with her. And she's on the phone, as you can hear her giggling in the background. Leonor, it's good to talk to you. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
I am delighted to hear that. No, nice to talk to you as well, and thank you for making the time. Before we go anywhere in relation to what you're doing, your name, you tell me, Bethencourt, is an old French name, but it's very common in, where did you say, somewhere in Spain?
In the Canary Islands.
That's
my grandfather was from the Canary Islands, so Bethencourt, it's the descendants of Jean de Bethencourt who conquered the Canary Islands. So it's a French surname, but there's different variations to its spelling, but it's very, very, lots of people are called Bethencourt in the Canary Islands.
Okay.
So that's where I got the name.
And am I pronouncing it correctly then when I say Bethencourt, or is it Bethencourt?
Well, in English we say Bethencourt, and in Spanish, Bethencourt.
Okay. So, you're Spanish or you're Irish or you're a mix?
I'm a mix. I'm a Spanish father and Irish mother from the north.
Okay. So your mum is from Strabane, you tell me.
Uh-huh.
Lovely.
Uh-huh.
And what do you know about that area?
I have family there. It's an area I like a lot. I mean, it was a thriving place at one point when there was a train that went to and from Strabane. And it would have been very popular for shopping and fashion. It's a small place. Everybody knows everybody. So,
yeah.
You know, there's a kind of innocence about it, or, you know,
okay.
it's never changed in many ways, but it's nice.
As we say in Ireland, everybody knows everybody's business there.
Absolutely. You have to be very careful.
Now, your dad is Spanish, and where is he from?
My dad was Spanish. He was born in Madrid, and he met my mom there. My mother went over in 1969 and became my father's private English teacher.
Oh, yeah.
So that's how they met.
Oh,
and
lovely.
Then they got married and they had a family.
Lovely. So you were born in Madrid and you stayed there for a little time. So tell me a little bit about your growing up and how you ended up in Ireland.
I was born in Madrid, as I said. And then at the age of four, the whole family, we moved to Mexico on a little family adventure and stayed there for 7 years. So,
wow, what an adventure.
Well, it was very brave of my mom to, you know, coming from a small place like Strabane, to take her three young baby girls and then have another baby in Mexico.
Wow.
And so for us, it was a very good experience, very wild. And my dad worked for a coffee company.
Right.
And so that's, you know, a part of my childhood that I certainly was part of my education, and it was great, eye-opening and nurturing.
Lovely.
And then we moved back to Spain, and I went to school, secondary school in Spain. And then in 1997, I moved to Ireland with a newlywed with a Canadian husband who I'm still married to, and we live here. We have one daughter, and that's what we did. I met my husband. He was an actor in Canada, an actor and director.
Okay.
So we came to Ireland in the middle of the Celtic Tiger blow-ins, really, and then we ended up staying, and we both work in theatre here, so it's nice.
Now, you arrived in Ireland during the Celtic Tiger, as you say, and for those that don't know what that is, that's what we call the good times, when there was going to be no end to money and spending and all sorts of things like that.
Exactly.
And then, both of you being in the arts, did you have a difficult time when the tide turned and the whole country was kind of set back many, many years?
Not really, because the arts, there was never any money in the arts before, during or after the Celtic Tiger.
Right, okay.
So, no, certainly we were not affected the way other businesses or industries were. Certainly not. Just the same struggle, the day-to-day struggle of every day.
Was it more difficult in those days because people had less money to spend on going out to the arts, or were you clever enough to keep your productions small and inexpensive so that, you know, a small return would do you?
Exactly. That's what we did. But
all right.
I do know that the arts were affected, like comedy clubs, you know, the numbers were down and they are still down to this day. You know, things changed with the recession and everywhere was affected. Theatres closed down, like things changed for the arts. But for us, we just didn't make a big difference because There wasn't much money in them
as
to
we
begin
say,
with.
As we say in Ireland, what we never had, we never missed.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So tell me about how you got into the arts.
Well, I studied acting in Madrid and then continued studying here with private teachers here in Dublin. And then I did a few productions, you know, a little bit of auditioning. I had a foreign accent, so I was never going to blend in, you know. So I started doing things that had a little Spanish angle or an international twist because I thought that that was my niche.
Right.
And then I started doing a character stand-up comedy, again bringing the Spanish side in. So I wore, it was character stand-up, I wore a mask of Zorro.
Mm-hmm.
And I spoke with a thick Spanish accent and kind of mixed, you know, Irish-Spanish sense of humor.
Okay.
And so I did that for a few years. And then I wrote, because I had a background in theater, I wrote this character into a script. So a story about a Spanish girl who infiltrates the Rose of Tralee competition.
Infiltrates. I love it.
Well, she fakes that she has Irish descent, which is one of the conditions to be a Rose of Tralee, aspiring Rose of Tralee. You have to have Irish descent.
Right.
So she breaks the rules.
Right.
Well, she manages to win the competition, but then is disqualified due to a surprise random urine test.
Okay, and what showed up in that?
That she didn't have a single drop of Irishness in her.
And they could tell that from the urine test, the good.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And did she have to go through various trials and tribulations associated with that?
Yes, it's kind of a heroic tale. It's a love letter to the Rose of Tralee because it's a competition. It's very old-fashioned. It's still happens every year.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big money maker. It's part of a festival in Tralee. It means a lot to the local people of Tralee, and Irish people love to watch it on TV. It's kind of a quaint little thing that's very Irish, and that I was introduced to when I moved here, and I loved it. I used to watch it religiously.
Right.
So obviously from watching it, I got lots of ideas. And then that's what sets the tone for my story. So it's a heroic tale, and it's kind of behind the scenes at the Rose of Tralee. So lots of things that happen, you know, lots of details about the ball where you meet your escort.
Mm-hmm.
And just about dreams and aspirations and being young and full of hope.
Excitement, yeah.
Excitement.
And Irish poetry, yeah.
And as I get older, because I wrote this play in 2009 and celebrated its 10th anniversary last summer, so it's developed, it's grown, it's a good show. It always has been good, but you can tell it from whatever age you are, you know, looking back to the day when I was an aspiring Rose of Tralee, and I did it as a walking tour last summer. That was how I celebrated its 10th anniversary.
So I
brought people.
Explain that to me.
We met in an antique store called Needful Things, which is on Anger Street in Dublin.
Mm-hmm.
And we walked all the way up to the canal, and I just told them my story and just told them about first, you know, this innocent girl's first impressions of Dublin. So about the Celtic Tiger, about how things were when I first arrived. And anything that I write or do is always heavily semi-autobiographical.
Right, yeah.
So I blended Irish history and, you know, the Daniel O'Connell statue and the impression it had on me when I first arrived, and just built the story into the location where we were, and obviously interact with the shops and with the people who stop you, because I'm dressed in quite a colorful costume, which is a flamenco dress,
mm-hmm.
and with my mask of Zorro. And then the people on the tour are also wearing a mask of Zorro, so that they can see the story through my eyes. That's the idea. So it's quite visual. It's a lovely thing. It startled a lot of people who walked past us and have no idea what happened or why we were doing that.
And was there big interest in taking this walking tour with you?
Some interest. You know, I think I'm going to do it again next year, and building on the steps from last year. It was very beautiful to do. It was a lovely artistic thing. It was like busking, like standing out there with your guitar, you're kind of interacting with people who don't expect to come across you that day. So I think that there's potential there, especially blending in the Irish history and the Mask of Zorro and drawing from William Lamport, who was the original Zorro and the inspiration for the movies and the cartoons and the comic books. And he was actually originally from Ireland, you know, and the character is quite Hispanic. So drawing, you know, I think that I'm going to do it again and hopefully build on the experience from last year.
And going back to the thing that you mentioned when you started talking about comedy and doing your acts and writing, you said to try and appeal to the sense of humor of both the Irish and the Spanish. Is there a connection? Is there a commonality there?
Well, I think both in nationalities, we have a killer sense of humor. I think we're known for it, and they're very different styles. So the mix is quite electric because the Irish were quite witty, you know, quick on the line, and the Spanish have a way of making fools of themselves and not minding being the fool in the story. So there are things in common and then very different aspects. And
I suppose,
yes, for shocking humor.
Yeah, both nationalities are very much into self-deprecating humor, really, aren't they?
I think
aren't
so.
We? Yeah.
I think
yeah.
So.
Yeah. So what are you working on at the minute then?
Well, I do a literary cabaret, which it came up just from my association with Buzzwell's Hotel. It's a hotel in the city centre of Dublin. It has a lot of history.
It does.
I have a history with it myself, as every artist. I support my life and pay the bills, you know, working part-time in hospitality, which is very flexible.
Yeah.
When I first moved to Ireland, I worked in Buzzwell's for a couple of years. And then years later, I'm back there now working a few days a week. And I do a literary cabaret there once a month. And it's a variety show. And every month, the theme is different. So we've been doing that for 2.5 years. And sometimes guests who are staying in the hotel come along, sometimes tourists who are in town or just locals. Mm. We have a lot of people who just come to every show, you know, because the theme is different and the show is different. So I draw from all of the people I've met through the years in the comedy circuit, by doing variety shows, you know, in the music scene, and actors who I've worked with. And I choose the theme and pick scenes from theater, sometimes from film. Sometimes we have poetry, and then we have musical performers and comedians, and I give them the theme and they take it in their stride.
Absolutely fantastic.
And it's different. It's like there's an old fashioned style of entertainment in it as well. Buzzwell's is beautiful, and the room where we do it is the Oak Room, and it's like a living room. Full of history itself.
Lovely. So, yeah, for those that don't know, Buzzwell's Hotel is located on the corner just across the road from Dáil Éireann, from the Irish Parliament. So it'll be frequented regularly by media personnel and political characters. So I'm sure you've seen and heard plenty in your day, have you? It's no wonder you're into comedy.
I have. And another thing I did in Buzzwell's was when we celebrated the 100th anniversary of the 1916 Rising, I commissioned a playwright to write a play based around the events of 1916 and it based in Buzzwell's Hotel, because Buzzwell's was at the center of where everything was happening.
Yeah.
So the story was fiction, but it was based in Buzzwell's, and it happened on the Tuesday of Easter week in 1916.
Lovely.
So it was a romantic story, and then you had all of the staff of Buzzwell's coming out of the kitchen and kind of updating the audience on what they knew, what they were hearing down the road that was happening. You know, so the idea was lovely.
It certainly sounds it, and it certainly sounds as though you're quite busy and have been for quite some time.
Yes, well, I always enjoy, I mean, I come up, I'm a doer and a maker, and I do make things happen, and I do things from scratch. They're nice things, they're nice artistic things.
Absolutely.
You know, they're not, they could appeal to the masses, but I haven't drawn the masses to them yet.
And we'll get the word out.
Exactly.
All right.
Please do.
Well, listen, unfortunately, I only have an hour for the program, and I reckon there's a lot more in a conversation with you. So we might pause it there and with a promise to come back. And maybe sometime if I'm in Dublin, I'll give you a shout and we could maybe sit in Buzzwell's Hotel and we'll get maybe a longer session from you. How would that be?
That would be lovely.
All right. Well, for the moment, Leonor Bethencourt, thank you so much indeed for talking to me. Continued success with your career.
Thank you very much.
And I certainly will be going back to talk to that lady. I mentioned the Bothy Band a little while ago when mentioning the birthdays. Paddy Keenan, the wonderful Illan Pipes player, synonymous with the Bothy Band. He was born in Trim in 1950 on the 30th of January. The man that used to drive the cars and the vans to go with them and set up the gear was PJ Curtis, who went on to produce a lot of their music and a lot of the wonderful music that we know from that time in Ireland. So I thought it would be nice. And when I was reading the email from Marcus Connaughton, there was a mention of the Bothy Band as well. And I was in Nurka last week and met up with my pal PJ Curtis, and we sat for a good number of hours having a good old chat. The Bothy Band was actually mentioned on many occasions. So let's take a listen to them. Three fabulous pieces of music in here: Leitrim Fancy, Round the World for Sport, and Rip the Calico. The Bothy Band. Thank you. just because we haven't played enough of the Bothy Band over the last couple of years on the programme, but as well as that, to mark the birthday of Paddy Keenan, the Illan Pipes player with the Bothy Band for a time. He was born on the 30th of January 1950, so we mark his birthday this week. Now, a couple of things that are happening that you might be interested in. The 1st of February, as you know, is St. Bridget's Day, and so there are a number of things happening, and I have been given information about one. So if you happen to be in the Bilbo area, then you will maybe be interested in what they are doing. It is, as I said, the 1st of February. There is an event planned. I don't have a huge amount of information, so I'm not going to give you the sparse bit of info that I have. But if you would like to, if you're in the area and you would like to take part in the event for St. Bridget's Day Fiesta, well then, there's an email address that I can give you. It's a man by the name of Joe, and his email address is wordlan2012@gmail.com. And I know there are buses from Bilbao, from Bayonne, from Pamplona and other places going to this particular event as well. Something else that you might be interested in coming up on the 9th of February, the Irish Basque Dance Workshop for adults and children. Again, it's all in that neck of the woods and it's on the 9th of February. And if you would like to get involved or you would like to go along or find out more about it, again, I can give you an email address, Sam C. Quaid, S-A-M-C Quaid, Q-U-A-I-D @gmail.com is his email address. If you happen to be in that area and you would like to attend the Irish Basque Dance Workshop for adults and children. So there we go. Let's take a quick break. Come back to me just after that. And we have a small bit left.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
I don't recall ever going as close to the wire as this. When I said just before the commercial break that we only had a little bit left, I didn't quite realise how little it was. That is it. We're done and dusted for another week on the Live on Era, the Irish programme. Can I say thank you to our contributors today, to Ben Sweeney from Clare FM. Thanks to Ben for keeping us up to date on General Election 2020. A wonderful conversation. I really enjoy chatting with Leonore Bethencourt, and I will be definitely chatting to that lady again. As always, can I say thank you to our Spanish-Irish cultural advisor, Jose Antonio Sierra, for his sterling work on the programme. And most importantly, thank you for listening, and I hope that you will join me again next Monday on the programme. It couldn't all happen, of course, without Rob and Daisy in production. So thanks as well to the two of you. Right, good luck so. Mind yourselves and each other, and we'll see you next Monday, hopefully, for another edition of Live on Era. From me, Ger Sweeney. Until then. Bye-bye now.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.